All right, Zig coming in on the top. Today on the show, we have Adam and Kate of The Baker's Basement. The Baker's Basement is a Cleveland-based duo with a unique style of songwriting and performing. Going under the genre of alternative folk, The Baker's Basement uses their skills they've learned from busking and songwriting to make a unique concert experience unlike no other. Kate, instead of playing a drum kit, plays this amalgamation of electronic drums and buckets. And it's super incredible to watch. And she plays standing up. And the songwriting, they have this banter, this call back and forth, which makes their songs have a whole nother life as opposed to just coming from one voice. I've been lucky to be in the scene with these guys from the beginning, and it's incredible to see them grow and all the music that they've come out with since. And it's incredible how they give back to the scene and continue to nourish the Cleveland music scene. The Baker's Basement has a gig April 7th, Sunday, April 7th, at the 5 o'clock lounge with the return of the great Johnny Habu. Johnny Habu and the Baker's Basement are going to do a combo wombo set supporting Aqua Cherry from New York and Ziggy D of Sea Level, me. I'll be opening up the set. I think Coda will be joining me, so it might be more of an acoustic Sea Level set to celebrate the return of the great Johnny Habu, but also to support our new friends Aqua Cherry. And that is a free show happening April 7th, Sunday, the 5 o'clock lounge, Lakewood, Ohio, 9 p.m. Also, the Baker's Basement are releasing a song a month. Every month they're putting out a new single. We are going to listen to one of them. This is Love I Can Love, latest from the Baker's Basement. Dig it.
I got a love I can love.
That was Love I Can Love from the Baker's Basement, available on all the streaming platforms. And every month, they will be coming out with a new one. So if you dig what you heard, please give them a follow and keep your ears open because new stuff is going to be coming out. One more reminder, April 7th, 9 p.m., the 5 o'clock lounge, Baker's Basement, Ziggy DFC level, and the return of the great Johnny Habu supporting Aqua Cherry from New York. It's a free show. Check it out. And if you like what you heard, if you can like, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, the name of the podcast platforms, it helps me keep talking to cool guests like our friends from the Baker's Basement and sharing their insight with you. Now, without further ado, here's my conversation with the Baker's Basement. To kind of jump into it, like, did you guys do other projects before Baker's Basement on your own?
For sure.
Yeah.
I started, I think when I was like 17, I was in a band called the Hey Yous. So it was an all-girl punk rock band around here.
And then, were you playing drums?
Yeah. Yeah, I started with playing the full drum kit. And now it's the bucket kit these days.
I mean, you had all kinds of bands growing up. You know, bands that started and stopped. That was the one that really stuck from what you told me.
But I guess as far as like shows too, like that was probably the one where we started doing shows. Growing up, I had all types of bands. When I was like 10, I was like, yeah, we need to be serious. We need to take this. And my friends are like, no, we don't want to play music. So I was always trying to force it on somebody.
Was it, well, I think that, what was it, what kind of brought that out of you? Do you remember a moment where, like, you were like, I want to do music, like, seeing a show or listening to a record that installed that drive? Because at 10, that's, like, impressive that want to, like, make your friends do anything, like, organized at 10, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I started playing snare drum when I was 9, and then, definitely was heavily influenced by having like my brother in the house. We always watched TRL and Blink-182 was a big band growing up. But, yeah, it was just kind of a really fun thing for me to always do. I just loved playing the drums.
And Adam, what about you?
Let's see. I mean, before I met Kate, I was mostly a solo artist living in Virginia, Northern Virginia. So I was all over the open mic circuit there as much as I could. I mean, the thought of having my own gig seemed even foreign to me. I was like, that's not something I can do. That's something that other people do. I'm just going to be doing this open mic thing because I don't know what I'm doing. But yeah, I'd write my own songs and play all over Northern Virginia and Washington, D.C. I mean, there were some stints with some friends, but nothing that really was, actively gigging. It wasn't until I met up with Kate where I started experiencing the club scene and, you know, all types of shows around Cleveland. Mm-hmm. When we started, we were a 3-piece, actually. We were a band called Feeding the Nerve. And then within a few months, we were a 2-piece. And we saw a band called Mr. Gnome, you might have heard of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they really inspired us because we weren't sure. We're like, should we try to find a third member again, or should we just try to go it as two? And then that Kate was like, check out Mr. Gnome.
Yeah, I feel like it was, then we saw their schedule. It was like literally the next day they were playing a show.
At
like,
Beachland.
This is a sign. Like, we got to check it out. And it was just really encouraging to see two people pulling off like such an impact and such like heavy stops and starts. We're like, wow, like, I don't know, just to see the possibilities right in front of you when you're kind of feeling a little down about like, what do we do next? It was really helpful.
Well, and Mr. Gnome's such a tight band too, like holy shit.
The twists and turns, the dynamics, the force, the energy, all of it.
I feel like we got there and we almost were like pushed into the front row. So it was like, this is your first Mr. Gnome experience, like it was like, welcome to the family.
Oh, yeah. The fans are neither side of us. It's like, we're so excited for you.
Oh, and then the show ends and they're like, no, he's putting his shoes on, it's over, everybody leave. Like, it was just so funny. Yeah. Like, they're paying attention to every detail. They're like, yeah. No, they're done,
apparently. When the drummer of Mr. Gnome puts his shoes on, that's how you know that there's no more encore, the show is officially over. So that's the kind of super fan that we were next to at that show.
What a cool like experience though. You know what I mean? Like when you're going to dive into something and you don't know, it's like you want to meet that super like nerdy, like totally immersed individual who's like welcoming, because sometimes you meet the person that is like that but isn't welcoming, like, oh, you didn't know about the shoes, you know what I mean? Like,
just so excited to tell us more. And yeah, it was kind of like a doorway into this magical world of music that ended up being so inspirational to us. Mm-hmm. And really the start of us really believing in creating through limitation and boundaries.
That's incredible. It's like someone's like enthusiasm like that is contagious, right? You know what I mean? When you're with someone who's like super into trains, you start to kind of be like, trains are pretty cool. You know what I mean? Like, if someone is passionate enough like that and open, like you, there's something humanly like addicting about that immersion, that like that's so cool that at that moment you guys had that. Because when bands are kind of falling apart and it's like, it's so hard to get a person who's dedicated to going through the shit. You know what I mean? Because so much of all this is like persevering through nonsense, shitty bills. They changed their time set. We're playing actually after the gig the next day. You know, like behind.
There's 10 bands on this. Like, are you okay with that?
Yeah, sure. You know, no one's getting paid. You know, like
the engineer fell asleep.
Yeah. The sound guy's not here yet. Actually, there is no sound guy.
Run the sound. Could you run the lights? Could you run the door? Yeah, sure.
Like, there's so much of this nonsense. You got to persevere and to find someone who's like, yeah, that's cool. We're doing this. I enjoy doing this. Like, is such a like rarity, you know, to find another, like, holy shit, there could be two other people here. It's like, it's so hard. It's so hard. And like to meet someone at that, like that at that moment, I can see like, and then see like what it can be, you know, as a two piece is like, that's heavy. The kind of pick, Adam, your brain a little bit more about before even that moment. So as you're hitting up these mic nights, like, were you singing and playing, like, was there someone in your family that kind of inspired you to do this? What kind of, like, brought up, I even want to write songs and then try to play them in front of people?
Let's see. Maybe I should trace it back. Fourth grade, my first instrument was violin. You had to either sing or be in the orchestra or the band. And so that was my doorway to music and learning a little bit about reading music. But I think it was probably right around middle school, I got my first journal, really angsty, write in the journal all your complaints and figure out, you know, whatever forced rhyme you can muster. This is, I've always had a love for words, I should say. So I think it was more like poetics at the start. It was violin and poetry, and then came eighth grade, and that's when the guitar came around, and my brother and I were handing off this guitar that he had gotten. I think it was probably as soon as I learned a few chords and learned a few Blink-182 songs and Stain songs, probably. From there, I quickly transferred to being like, oh, I can overlay words over this. I should also say around that time, I inspired and obsessed with hip hop. And so I remember going to these chat rooms online and like trying to have rap battles with people by like typing in. It's like I'm freestyling by typing. not freestyling at all. It was very premeditated. I was like, oh, is that really good? You know, 6 minutes later, I put my freestyle down. the chat room era. But yeah, I guess somewhere between poetry, violin, starting to learn guitar and loving hip hop, songwriting kind of started percolating, and then it became more of, you know, vocals and guitar as my standard kind of way of writing. But still tons of rhyming. I've always loved the rhymes, and I even DJed a little at the time. I tried, beat mixing, and I would make my own mixtapes and try to like rap over that. And it was kind of a hilarious time in retrospect.
But I mean, so many of the musical elements within that, you know, are still prominent in what you guys do now. And like, especially with like rhythm and words, like I think Baseball Banner is one that kind of jumps to my head right now, which kind of is like that in its baker's basement baked form, finished product, which is what you guys, you know, now. And it is interesting, as like I was talking with someone before, like last week, about it's like interesting what you kind of as a kid, what you kind of latch on to, like the AC/DC and the Kiss and the Blink-182, some of these bands that like now you're kind of like, oh, well, I wouldn't wear the t-shirt, but I would talk about it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's something that's like so reachable about all those type of bands and acts like that and like movements like that have prominent musical seeds to be planted. And like, but anyway, like, so going from like this wordplay and stuff, did singing for I, and this is open to both of you guys, was that something that came easy? I mean, maybe Kate coming with it more with a punk attitude, there's that kind of like the thing you can kind of like muster behind that makes it not as like vulnerably scary to sing, because there's something different even from writing to like actually like recording your voice and be like, oh shit.
Oh, yeah, it's under a magnifying glass of like, okay, that's what it really sounds like.
But as far as singing, did it come kind of easy for either of you guys, or was it a struggle? What did that kind of look like?
So when I first started with the Hey Yous, I didn't do any singing. I did maybe like a little bit of backup singing. And even when we first started the Feeding the Nerve project, I wouldn't say I was doing a lot of vocal. It was kind of when we decided to start doing the two-piece, I got a little bit more comfortable with my voice. But at first, I was very hesitant about the way my voice sounds. It's not like a very belty kind of girl voice, I guess, to have. It's a little bit grittier. Like, I've had
jazzy grit.
Jazz grit. I've had people say, like, oh, like, your voice sounds so, like, disturbing, but I like it. Haunting. I'm like, thank you. You know, thank you, and I'm sorry for disturbing you. But I don't know. I guess it just took a long time of hitting the record button and listening to my voice over and over in the songwriting process to get more comfortable with how it sounds.
Mm, and tons of shows. At some point early on, we started writing these, you know, kind of like the baseball banter that you brought up. We started writing these songs where we just bounce lyrics back and forth, and very much in that kind of hip hop style. And I think that was empowering some of those early songs. Like, we had this
more confidence in like going back and forth in that spoken word nature rather than like singing.
Yeah, it's a lot more casual. So maybe it made it. Maybe it built a bridge to you to feel like you could jump in some of those kind of songs.
For sure.
I mean, I think I was always more comfortable with it, you know, me and my guitar. I always kind of weird about my voice. I think I still kind of am, just kind of self-conscious about it. It's always kind of a battle. It shouldn't be a battle. It should be a harmonious relationship. So I'm still trying to work that out. But yeah, I would say when we started, it was mostly me singing, and then Kate kind of came into the fold over those first few years, and now it's very much back and forth. You know, Kate was used to gigging, I was used to singing, and so she empowered me with the backbeat and helping me find more rhythm. And I think I may have empowered Kate a little bit as she was finding her legs with being more confident on the mic. These days, I can't get her to stop. So
I think that's like a beautiful balance of like a musical partnership, right? You want someone that challenges you and like brings stuff out of you, but you the same for them. And that's like, that's a whole nother level of finding someone who's committed to just doing the project and is into it. You know what I mean? Someone who's actually healthy to work with. Like, that's, I'm so happy like you guys have that. That's a really important thing with any creative endeavor, whatever it is, to have like one, someone who cares about it, like, and can help you grow from it, and you do the same. That's so,
I think we both like recognize like how special that is to have that kind of relationship with this band, of always encouraging someone to, like you said, try something new or better the artistic journey together.
When I was getting ready to move out here all those years ago so that we could start making music together more actively, we used to exchange emails, you know, talking about bands and songs that we really loved and really breaking them down. But we also talked about kind of like the general guidelines of what we were going to do artistically. And I remember us always saying, like, when we do this, we're a writing team. Like, we're both going to be writing at the time, all three of us. We're going to be writing. And we're never going to shoot down ideas until we give them a go, give them a try, even if they seem absurd or outlandish. You know, we're always going to give something a little bit of motion to see if it will work. So I think from the very beginning, we had this value of open-mindedness and mutual respect for each other. And I think that that's always stuck with us through the years.
But also honesty too. I mean, there's definitely moments where I know that I might come up with an idea that he does, like Adam doesn't necessarily like, or vice versa. And we've gotten so much better at just accepting that from the other person. Like it's not like a breaking point of, there's no tension. There's tension to figure it out, but yeah, it's not like, oh, we're not doing my part.
Yeah, there's always another song. There's always something else that you can move on to. And there's a good chance that that next thing is going to be more exciting, as long as you don't get tripped up by the thing that, you know, could have had such life before. It's like, it's endless. Like there's always something to move on to. So
well, definitely those are wise words, like for sure. Like as far as like the creative process and stuff like that, I've talked with this guy, his name's Daniel Warren Johnson. And he kind of hinted at that in a different way, saying you got to kill your darlings. So like instead of holding on to this idea and trying to make it this perfect thing in your mind before actually doing it, you just got to do it, right?
Yeah.
And like that's hard for one person to do, but let alone as a team to do. That's a whole nother like level of communication and dynamic that takes trust in you know years of working together to be able to like, all right, we'll hear it out, like.
Yeah.
See, it's not bad, but maybe we come back to that when you have a verse part. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, not getting too precious about anything, you know, just finding inertia is the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's interesting. So many of the fleeting things that you don't care about actually like hit, or it seemed to like other people are like, that was neat. And you're like, it was? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can never know.
Yeah.
So when you guys, so you met V, how did you guys meet as a trio? Like, did you meet at a mic night? Did you meet at a passing gig? Like, what initially kind of, like, if you were emailing before trying to put this together before moving Adam, how did you guys initially come in contact?
So the year was 2011, and Kate and I both went to a place called the Recording Workshop. You heard of that place?
No, I haven't.
It's in Chillicothe, Ohio, or more precisely, Massieville. I was living in Virginia at the time. Kate was in Cleveland, and we both had no idea what to do with ourselves in life. And we went to this place where it's basically a crash course in how to record. And part of the way they would do this program, there's like 60 students there, a bunch of cabins in the woods, a very small kind of personable
like
school.
A month-long program,
mm-hmm.
to try to learn audio engineering.
And part of the way they teach is like, you know, you record, but you're also the artist. They believe strongly in order to be a good engineer, you need to know what it's like to be on the other side of the glass. And so they would break you into groups. And, you know, a lot of these groups had certain kinds of music that was just their kind of music. So they were like the bluegrass guys and the metal guys.
Or there was a group that just had beards, so they just called them the Beardos.
The Beardos.
That's pretty good.
yeah.
But then there was our group, and our group was like the Misfit Toys, because our interests were all over the place. Like, it was like, some of us like folk, and some of us like punk, and some of us like hip-hop, and some of us like beats, and like soul, and like, we're just kind of like the hodgepodge group, which ended up being magical, because you put all those interests together, and you make some music, and it's just no telling what's going to happen. Long story short, Kate and I got put into that group, and we started writing together just by chance like that. So we would do that in class and through the night, and that's when we first started drinking coffee. Neither of us drink coffee until we went to Chillicothe, because we would never. So long story short, the program ended. Kate was very good about communicating after that, being like, oh, what are you doing? What are you making? You know, we were both recording in our own worlds. But I came out to Cleveland and we started demoing a few songs over the course of a weekend, and we really liked what happened.
Yeah, you came to visit for a weekend, and then I think we had four or five songs that we made just around town, observing things, going to different parts. And
yeah, Kate showed me Cleveland. She gave me the tour. But long story short, we loved those demos enough for me to be like, I wasn't too fond of living in DC to begin with. It you know, there's something intriguing about Cleveland, much more affordable from an artistic standpoint. You know, everything's not so spread out. There's so many traffic. There's so many towns you can get to where you can gig outside of Cleveland that are close by. So yeah, long story short, I just was like, I'm moving to Cleveland. I need to shake it up. So I came out here. And so the third member was from Kate's band, the Hey Yous. Mm-hmm. And so that's how, you know, we were all combined.
We're still friends. Yeah. Didn't work out as a group.
Yeah. I mean, life happens. And when people start moving, you're like, I don't know if I'll move. But if she was from the Hey You, she's probably here in Cleveland.
Even just like appreciating someone's honesty that early of like, I don't know if I could commit.
Right.
Or just different interests at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I appreciate that so much, because what if we would have started something and it would have been years into that project.
And then we had to figure out how to.
For sure. No, that makes it like, I admire, especially now, especially years after saying yes to so much shit, I admire someone who can say no.
Thank you so much for having that boundary for yourself.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, I this whole week has been that, like, oh, what's close enough to Cleveland to go do? For me, it's really cool because like everything is here and everything's not too far away. So it is a really kind of magical little hub. And from my experience of the music scene here, like everyone's super supportive. Everyone I may be a bit spoiled with my rose tinted view, putting together a lot of like benefit shows and seeing people give a shit and like making these benefit things work and like being at the gallery and meeting people and like this kind of like rose-tinted view. And like, so my view of the Cleveland music scene is very, very rose-tinted, and like you can't convince me that it's not good, because I know all the people are really, really nice and supportive and doing it. And like, granted, there are a lot of fractions and, you know, cracks everywhere of little, you know, different type of genre based things, but I think it's overall very, very supportive. So when you started playing in Cleveland, did you guys kind of get that sense? And then how long into playing in Cleveland was it until you met Johnny Habu?
Let's see.
Here we go.
Johnny Habu. So yeah, was that 12, 13 maybe?
It was pretty early.
I remember some of our earliest gigs. Our first gig was at a place called Bella Dovey. You remember that?
Yes. Yes, yeah. I played so many gigs at Bella Dovey.
Mm-hmm. I know, Kate, you played there as the Hey Yous, and then didn't you?
Yeah.
And then we played there as Feeding the Nerve, and then maybe we played there as Baker's Basement.
I think so.
I don't know. But I guess I'm getting off topic. I was thinking about the Depacement. We can talk about that later.
We'll put a pin in that.
One of their shows, Johnny Habu learned about the Depacement through Bella Dubby, but that's unrelated at the moment.
I played that show. That was their first show at Bella Dubby.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I opened up. And like, you know, let's unpin that right now. Like, because I remember at the time I was developing my like solo act. So I didn't have it fully together. And I was dating at the time. That was the first time like they went and saw me play. And like, I did this acoustic act, and after me was this crazy band from Japan that, like, you know what I mean? Like, and we're in this coffee shop thing that's a bar. It was such a weird, like, amalgamation of unique things. And I'm like, I'm for sure afraid I terrified this person.
Yeah. That's so good. Yeah. So did you just stumble upon the Depacement?
I believe it was Jeremy who put it together and was like, do you want to do this? And I was like, yeah. And then like, or maybe it was John. I can't remember how I got on that bill, but I was on that bill, and I remember seeing these guys and be like, "Oh my god, they're incredible! These guys are so much fun."
I feel like the music online, like I always say, like you just have to see it in person.
Yeah,
like,
you
so understand. Yeah.
Yeah, the music when you listen to the recording, it doesn't match the level of like what you're seeing.
You just have to see that energy at the same time, you know?
It's the movement, the total aesthetic. It's the theatrics. It's all the banter in between. I mean, like, I see what they do as theater, almost.
I think we learned a lot from them just in general. Because, like, they'll show up very quiet, and then they just put their uniforms on. It's just completely different.
So were you guys at that show?
No. Okay. It's we brought it up just because, you know, Habu has been pretty tight with helping him get shows over the years and, you know, giving him some direction and just but that's where he saw them. He was smitten by them. So okay, he recalled that day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he was there by chance. I don't think he organized. I remember him saying that, like, I wasn't planning to be at this coffee shop. I just kind of by chance ended up there, and he's like, it changed my life.
Yeah. I think he was on a date there too. Like after the date, maybe the date almost wanted to leave.
That's an, oh man. Cause I reached out to Johnny too. I was like, I'll, you know, it'd be fun to pick Johnny's brain before he comes back. But like in the text chain, I was saying he couldn't, cause I guess he's moving back, right?
Yeah. He's, so for those listening out there, Johnny Abu has a history in the armed forces. He started in the Marines, and now he's been in the Navy for some time, and he's been stationed in a variety of places, including Portsmouth, Virginia. And then he ended up back in Japan. That's where he's been the last few years. Mm-hmm. But he's on to a new assignment in Rhode Island. So, yeah, he might actually be on a plane as we speak this very moment.
So that's why I think it didn't pan out. But but that's like, that's so crazy that that was such an impactful night for more than, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Have you read the Nerd Out? I have issues 1 through 3 of The Pacement, the comic.
Oh, yeah. We have them. Oh, yeah. We have stacks of them.
We have
all the storage for The Pacement.
We have all their equipment.
Yeah, we have their equipment, their merch. So when they come back in town, like, we'll be helping unleash the Pacement. Amazing.
Do you know if they are at any point?
We haven't heard. Okay, Hikaru, he has mentioned that there's another album on the horizon. I was kind of really intrigued because it was kind of like a dark cover, like for what they do. Yeah. So I haven't heard anything since. I'm always hoping. I know they, you know, they have family. They never really talk about their personal life when they're in town. But I know that a couple of them have kids and are married. So I don't know. I guess the guitarist Habu later relayed every time they would come into town for those few weeks, their guitarist would quit his job because he would just quit because they wouldn't be okay with him leaving for a few weeks. He's like, well, I guess I'm going to quit and come back home and find a new job. That's how much they wanted to be here.
That's so punk. Holy. Wow.
Yeah. Satoru is definitely wild, man.
Yeah. Well, also in just a totally different culture and totally different, like, to go to New York for a weekend is hard, right? But to go from Japan to America, but anyway, we'll dive into
that. It's a whole nother can of worms.
So you guys, the first gig is at Bella Dubby with the trio. Take me to that. Who is on the bill? Are they still around? How'd the night go?
You remember a band called These Knees?
These Knees.
Years ago. Yeah.
Her name was Stephanie. Very talented. I wish I could remember her last name. It begins with a T. I think she's living in Carolina these days. I think it was a 2 or 3 band bill. And from there, you know, we started taking these guerrilla events. Remember guerrilla?
Like the Peabody battle bands.
You know, I feel like that's almost like a rite of passage when you're a new band looking for any gig you can get, is you play some battle of the bands where the promoter kind of takes advantage of everybody.
Yeah. You do that and you play you do a Gorilla Productions and you had to have done a Path in the Flats to get your like Cleveland rite of passage.
There you go.
So we definitely did a few of those events, but that's how we met. That led to Johnny Abu, right?
I was going to say we met Johnny Abu at the 5 o'clock lounge.
But the 5 o'clock lounge is booked by somebody on Gorilla.
Oh, okay.
We played a Gorilla show and one of those guys was like, oh, I want to play the 5 o'clock lounge. And it was the Johnny Abu and the Rebel Salmon, although it was only like two members of the Rebel Salmon. So it was like this tiny kick drum, like pushed up against a piece of cinder, like a cinder block. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but I just remember Johnny coming up. Oh, I'm Johnny.
Very tall when you first see him. And then when he performs, it's like a whole different thing. And then I remember after the night, he gave us like 5 of his CDs, like a cassette or something. I was like, wow, you got so much stuff to listen to.
Yeah. Our introduction to Johnny Abu, always having so much stuff to get, whether CDs, vinyl, cassettes, you know, A tracks, you know, he's always has piles of stuff.
Amazing.
What, just that's him in general. Like, he's does music. He's a bodybuilder. He's a comedian. He's a psychiatric nurse. You know, this guy does
a manager, a song and dance man, like an actor.
Every time we talk, I learn like something new that he does. I'm like, what?
Yeah, like. I yeah, and like with all the multiple projects too, like I remember getting, I bought it from him. It was like a mini cassette, which was a answering machine.
Oh, yeah.
Recording of their record. It's like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
He's very inspiring to every time he's doing something, you're like, oh, we gotta, I don't know, and it just always encourages you to come up with more creative ideas. It's really good to have those kind of friends that are always just kind of doing off the wall stuff to pay attention to.
Between him and the Debasement, you know, Johnny Abu has said it to us, and the Debasement just kind of embodies it. He's like, when you go on stage and you have these kind of like fantasy kind of acts that they do, it's like, it's all or nothing. It's like, you either give it 100% or it's just not going to work. And like, those two acts fully embrace that. I've seen Johnny Abu as a solo act go into a room that's like 10 people and him just go nuts, like no holding back, like, you know, people casually sipping their beer at the bar,
like laying on the floor, just,
yeah,
super into
just
it,
scooting around. Man. He's special.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, and that's, so you guys meet Johnny at, what would you say, that's like second or third gig from that Bella W? How many gigs were you guys in at that point?
I don't know, that might be 10 or 15 in. Okay. It's hard to say.
But definitely within the first year or two.
Yeah.
Okay. So were you, Kate, were you doing the bucket drums at that point?
I think I was doing a full drum kit at that point. The buckets kind of started, I want to say in like 2016, 20.
Well, the single bucket started earlier.
Oh, okay.
There came a point where we really wanted to start street performing because, you know, I think it dawned on us when you play at a club, it's like, this is cool. You know, we're playing every weekend, but when we play, we only get 25 to 40 minutes. And that's not a whole lot of time to be on stage. We're just like, we just want more stage time. And we're also very inspired by like busking culture. You know, that's, to me, that's one of the scariest stages when you're approaching it. You know, there's just no telling what kind of reaction you might get when you put yourself out and run to a street corner. But yeah, long story short, we kind of gravitated when we were doing the traditional kit to a single bucket, and we started doing street performance in Ohio City for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it kind of developed into something.
Because we took the bucket to like a lot of venues and
played at venues too,
which is cool. But then we were kind of thinking like, how do we get more timbres? How do we get more texture? How do, you know, with two people, how do we get more depth out of the drums? And that's how we started building our own drum kit. So that way I can stand and we can kind of both dance and get into it. And
well, the standing came later, right? Yeah. It kind of evolved from the ground and worked its way upward. I feel like there's a jumble of thoughts there.
It's a jumble of things that happen. Like, yeah. Busking, busking culture is a really interesting, like, it's a harder, like, get. Because in a bar, you kind of set the stage, so to say, for the reaction you want people to have with whatever you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, the people are always the X of the equation, right? You got to find what they are and where they fit into the equation. But ideally, like, if you come in with lights and like a show, you've either developed it or have an idea of what you want to get out of it. But when you busk, it's a different approach because now the audience is a flow. It's a stream and they're walking by and they give you your attention. It's almost like I find it really akin to like digital media, social media, like networking, because you only have like a couple seconds for someone to turn their head and be like, what?
Yeah, like, that's true.
It is really interesting.
They're either going to like drop the coin in the bucket, stick around, or they're going to keep going because they got shit to do. But like, it's finding this, like what you're doing and finding that that factor that makes people turn their heads and say what, which is much harder to do at an elongated level like playing on a corner, because that's hours on end. Whereas if you have a defined, tight 35-minute set, you can do that. You can eventually plan that out for everything, right?
Yeah.
But when you're doing it for hours on end, that just has to be your existence, like, which is much more challenging in my view.
And it's interesting just to see like the dynamic of people, just the variability, how one person's response might
influence another.
Yeah, might kind of have that domino effect of like someone else might throw in a dollar or stop and listen to you, like how people are so kind of influenced by what the person in front of them, like just really interesting to watch, yeah. I guess from the corner too. You're like, just the human nature breakdown of it.
Yeah. If you get four people to stop, at that point, there's a good chance that you might get people to circle up. But until those first two to four people stop, you know, it's harder to get them to. You see a lot of human psychology play out before your eyes when you're out there, which, you know, it built up a thick skin in us to do that for hours at a time.
For sure.
Most people are very supportive. Sometimes you get, you know, people that could be a little bit mean, but.
But there was like one in particular. I remember this guy was just saying, like, you guys, like, are able-bodied, you should have a job. And then all of a sudden, all these people started like throwing dollars in, like to support us. Like,
don't listen to him.
Don't listen. Keep going. I was like, this is so
keep
interesting.
Doing what you're doing. Like, wow. Like,
we're not upset.
We you're had upset. The day off. Like,
yeah.
A whole nother person who's like going, you know what I mean? That guy's got some shit he's working through.
Yeah. Always like the sad part. I'm like, what's going on in his guy's head?
Yeah, when someone goes out of their way to say something that's kind of, you know, attack of like that, we try to remind ourselves, you know, that's more about them. Something's going on in their belly that they're working out. Let's, you know, try not to take it to heart.
Mm-hmm.
What, like, how long did you guys do this? How long was this like a normal routine? Or do you guys still do? I know you guys were doing the Cedar Point, but that's like a different type of busking. But as far as this state, when you're developing this, how long did you guys do that for?
I want to say there were probably 2 years where we were heavily doing it, but probably off and on over 4, maybe 5 years.
All in Ohio City, or were you hitting other spots?
There have been times where we've been on tour. So, you know, when we're not playing the gig at night, we might busk.
Like in Asheville. Or Charlotte.
Yep, Charlotte.
And then in Cleveland, it would be maybe Little Italy sometimes, maybe Ohio City. Like, we were trying downtown. It wasn't really a good atmosphere for us. I feel like it was hard to get people to stop.
Partially because, like, acoustics are a big deal. Like, downtown, first of all, there's more bustle. But there's a lot more street noise in those big buildings. The sound bounces back and forth, and it's just, I think it's almost overstimulating. Like, everything gets washed out and swallowed up, and consequently, people are less likely to stop. Whereas, like, a shorter cityscape like Ohio City or Little Italy, the demeanor of people walking by is more casual.
Yeah. And there's a small mindset. Someone's like, I want to go to the market. Like, I think they're trying to take in a different part of the community. And I feel like downtown sometimes it's like, I just really want to get to the game. Or there's just more vision on where you're going rather than like, I'm going to stop and enjoy things.
Yeah. And also you're getting the, like, there's that weird kind of busking like territory, you know what I mean? Yeah. Downtown. And I just paid $30 to park. I don't got, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But literally like you get a lot of traffic in there. Like,
yeah.
So I can see that being a good spot. And that's a cool, like, A and B, the book, like a gig, and then be like, what were we doing before? Let's do this, you know? Like, one thing I started to do I've been doing this little acoustic solo tour run after the gigs have been wrapping up kind of early, and I've been trying to hit mic nights after that, you know, are popping. And I haven't had any luck. I've missed the sign up by like an hour. But if I would have planned that out earlier, that would have been a better way to handle this.
And that's determination, man. Play the gig and then try to get to the open mic night. I mean, that's kudos to you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, thanks. But you guys are doing it. Like, this is how we do it until we can't do it. Like,
yeah.
But on that note, so from doing that for 2 to 4 years, what from the busking, like, mentality and approach to playing have you like implemented into like the venue?
Well, the kit itself for sure. So that, I think I, like, as Kate said, the single bucket, we were also playing. And I think part of its purpose is like in smaller venues, like coffee shops, where the full drum kit would not have worked, we would take the single bucket indoors as well. And that's, as Kate said, you know, it's all well and good to have the smaller setup, like of the single bucket, but it gets grating on the ear if someone's listening for an hour or two. So we wanted to introduce more colors, and that's where the kit, you know, the bucket kit started evolving. And what we play now is not the first bucket kit. There was another version of it for a moment, which didn't quite land for us.
Yeah. So I'd say even just the creative nature of the bucket, creating our own stuff, obviously we took that to the stage. Yeah.
Utility is probably one of the main words I could say.
Yeah.
To what transferred from the street to the stage.
I would say a lot of jamming too. Like mm-hmm. we would start a lot of ideas just on the street, and we're like, oh, that was really cool.
Yeah, hit the record button.
So maybe just more our nature of having a little bit more flexibility.
Improv, like little elements of improv for sure. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else? Oh, banter. Just when you're on the street for a few hours and you're just kind of randomly talking between songs, you kind of learn how to speak off the cuff a little better as people have comments or that, you know, they're walking by. I think that translates a lot into some of our in-between songs, the storytelling, the banter, that kind of stuff. The theatrics in a way, maybe.
I think that's an important factor too, because like when you see someone play, you kind of want to like kind of want to know them a little bit more, especially like, or just like kind of pointing out, we're all in this weird venue. I can't believe there's a hole in the floor. And like everyone's like, yeah, me either. You know what I mean? Like it's little weird moments of connecting like that that you're like, I don't. That kind of brings everyone else in a non like, "What's up, Cleveland?" type of way. You know what I mean? Like,
how's everybody doing tonight?
Yeah, it's way more sincere and like, and I definitely think there's like a level of developing that connection in a way, and like, I think those are all skills that you get from hours of doing that. And like, I don't know, like thinking back through the years that I've seen you guys play, and seeing just how like you evolved, but also like the bucket kit evolving, like how it has a pad now. And now like the last show I saw you guys at the tavern, like, holy shit, that was sounding tight. Like, and like the room was booming. Like it was a whole nother like experience, but it was still like that creative, like Baker's Basement-ness that I've only seen you guys do, like the essence that the hoo-boo essence of like you can make anything work and we're doing all these different things, and like, but the refinement of time has only made it like tighter and tighter, and like it's super awesome to see, and I'm like excited for the Johnny Haboo Baker's Basement experiment we're going to see on the Sunday. Like,
we are too.
Yeah,
we see it as like a full circle kind of thing to be back there with John.
Yeah,
and like you knowing, you know, us meeting so early. That what was that place called, the Coffee Bean?
Wait. No, Bella W, right?
No.
Yeah,
where
the mic you had?
Yeah, it was the Coffee Bean. Right.
That's where we met you.
I know I've at least seen you before, at least at the gallery or something before, but maybe we didn't meet until. Until then. Yeah, that was a while ago. Shit.
Yeah, those were some of our earliest gigs for sure.
Yeah, I think it is really special to think about, like, oh, like we'll be at the 5 o'clock. That's the first time we play with Johnny and Boo. And then obviously playing with you, just because we've known each other for so long, it just feels like a celebration of our
the homecoming.
Yeah.
In our home.
This feels good.
Aside from the gig, what else do you guys have coming up? Because I know we've talked about some new tunes, and like the new tunes you've been playing live are really, really good. So do you have anything else to plug before we kind of wrap it up here?
Let's see. Yeah, we have this song you alluded to earlier, Baseball Banter, in the spirit of the season. We kind of have an alter ego called the Baseball Boogie Band. So we like to play baseball songs sometimes.
We really like the letter
B. Yeah, we like alliteration. The Baker's Basement assumes the role of the Baseball Boogie Band, played on the baseball banjo.
Live at the box
stop. Be there. But yeah, the baseball banter's coming out.
We have a video that is also with that song. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, our goal this year is to release a song every month. Still starting February is when. So that will lead right up to an album in November is the plan. And most of them, if not all of them, will have some kind of visual element to match, a video of some sort. So
the album will be Down Down Domino.
It's called Down Down Domino. So after April, May will be a song called Bad Habits. And then we have a song in June. It will be called Started Jamming in the Basement. It's kind of a nod to the roots of how many, you know, rock and roll bands start. Often it's either a garage or a basement. So yeah, the songs coming out each month is our biggest plug. We always love writing, and we're really trying to share as much as we can this year.
What do you guys have it's every third week of the month, or do you have a consistent release time, or is it kind of varying?
I think it's varying because it's always hard to keep up with. I wish we were organized, but no, it's varying.
it's more or less the first or second Friday of the month. But yeah, it kind of just depends. Some of the stuff is ready to go and some of it is being built as we speak.
For the baseball one, we wanted out close to opening day, so that was
That's a good idea. That's a good place to put it too, man.
Yeah, just celebrating baseball at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, for all you Cleveland fans out there who love Cleveland baseball, there's a nod to Mr. John Adams in the baseball banner. So John Adams is the guy who used to be out in the left field bleachers who would beat on the kick drum. He did that for decades before he passed a couple years ago. But yeah, in the baseball banner, we allude to him as the guy with the drum beat, and then we kind of isolate the sound of a pounding drum there for a second. So for all you baseball lovers.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was a shame that we lost him. It's crazy. You gotta dead. It's so cool that still exists with, the actual drummer and the actual organ player. You know what I mean? When you think about all this stuff, you could just have AI play a drum beat, and it's it makes me happy that those traditions like that stick, and that the guys that have been doing it did it until they couldn't that's what we're doing. We're doing it until we can't do it.
I think that is the connection with baseball and music that I think we like a lot, is the tradition. And like you said, it's just the nature of keep going, keep doing it.
They're both fields of dreamers. I mean, guys who are trying to make it in baseball are dreamers. Musicians are dreamers. And the role of music, take me out to the ball game,
this, so cool.
This thing that we all sing together in the middle of a game, we all stand up and we sing. Where else does that happen as a public? That's kind of a rare thing. Happy birthday, maybe.
Yeah.
But always begrudgingly with happy birthday, oh guys, come on.
Yeah, kind of mumbling.
Yeah, it's not as fun to sing. I feel like I never can sing it right. I don't know about you, but at gigs when they're like, "Hey, it's so and so's birthday," I'm always why is that such a hard song for me to sing?
It's a hard one in general. It's weird because it's in 3/4, and I think the consensus is most people sing it in E-flat. And you're like, what? It starts on a 5. It's a weird. I agree. I've put way too much thought into being able to pull it off, and every time I try to pull it off, I biff it. So
yeah, you can do a birthday jam at this point. Happy birthday.
Yeah. That's way better.
Yeah, they can sing it. It's not meant to be guided. It was meant to be collective.
Sing your own birthday. Yeah.
Was it? Well, guys, thank you so much for taking time to chat with me and for putting this gig together and being you guys for just this whole time that I've been playing. You guys have always been super inspiring with how unique you guys are and how you present yourselves and your music. And this has been, this has been cool because we only get to hang out at gigs. So this has been really cool to learn about you guys. So I appreciate this.
Thank you. Thank you for setting this up. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you for everything that you do in the community. You're always out there with a positive light. And I was there's Dave. You're just always a really good breath of fresh air for the scene.
Keep the negative space, in the forefront is always a beautiful. That's a special, special room.
Keeping positive the negative space.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yo, Spike Spiegel here. You just listened to Zig of the Gig podcast. Keep riding the bebop. See you, Space Cowboy. Bang.